All right, hi everybody, and welcome to lecture 74 in this American history program of History at Our House. Today we are going to actually look at the fighting in the Civil War and what happened in a very, very broad overview of the war and how it went and how it ended up in particular, and who was involved, who are the most important characters in bringing about, as we know, right, the end of slavery in America. And so yesterday we talked about the fact that the Civil War started because of a secession. So, Patrick was working on the vocabulary word secession. And when you are taking an action, Patrick, when you are doing it, what do you say about a person? They are, secession is a noun. What is the verb? It sounds like succeed. It sounds like secede. Who can help Patrick here? He's freezing up, even though he wrote this yesterday. Abby, go ahead.
They're seceding.
Succeed, right. Sounds like succeed. The verb is to succeed. And the southern states seceded from the Union when Abraham Lincoln was elected president because they knew he was a kind of abolitionist. Even though he said that as president, he didn't think there was anything that he could do to get rid of slavery. But what is ironic, ooh, and that's a big word, which is an interesting word. What is ironic, anybody who wants to raise their hand to ask me what that means, is that when the South seceded, that made it possible for Abraham Lincoln to get rid of slavery. So in other words, he said, I can't do anything about slavery. Then the South seceded, and they gave him the opportunity to end slavery. So, I still didn't get anybody raising their hands. I guess everybody knows what irony is here. Oh, okay. Oh, wait. Maybe. Abby, what about you?
I don't know what irony is.
Oh, okay. Okay. Abby doesn't know what irony is, but I guess Jack does. Jack, what's irony? Oh, wait. Jack's hand didn't go up. Okay, Nemo, what's irony?
When something happens. When something happens and you aren't expecting it, I think.
The unexpected is not the same thing as the ironic. Okay. Where did all the hands go? How come all the hands didn't go up when Mr. Powell used the word irony? Thought he'd let that one slip by? Irony is when you get the opposite of what you intended. So, in other words, the South said, we want to keep slavery, and what happened? We're seceding because we want to keep slavery. And what happened when they seceded? Abby?
They lost it.
Okay, that's part of the irony. The other part of the irony is, well, Abraham Lincoln said, there's nothing I can do about slavery. And the South said, well, we don't want you to be our president, so we're seceding. And then the irony of that is, well, by seceding, they allowed Abraham Lincoln to do something about slavery that he could never have done before. See how that ended up being the opposite? That allowed him to get rid of slavery when, if they had not seceded, he couldn't have done it. Irony is a very interesting thing. One, it happens a lot in history. That the results that people get are the opposite that they intend. And usually that happens because they didn't take History at Our House. And they didn't learn about the past properly. So, that happens a lot. So, you guys have heard the expression, those who do not remember the past are condemned to repeat it. So, yeah, that's what it means. When you don't learn about history and you take the wrong kinds of actions, then history will bite you because it will say you do not understand how this works, and you will get the opposite result that you intended. So we get secession and we get civil war, and this is what allowed slavery, the North and Abraham Lincoln as the president, to get rid of slavery. So let me share my screen here with you. Wyatt, put your hand down unless you have something further. So this was the beginning of the major violence in the Civil War. When the South seceded, Abraham Lincoln said, well, there is all of this property that belongs to the United States government all over the place in the South. We can't let you take it. He started to ask for troops to go and secure that property and to put down this rebellion against the authority of the government. And then when Southerners began to fire on a vessel of the United States Navy in Charleston, South Carolina, then he said, all right, you are officially in rebellion and we're going to force you to follow the laws of the United States. And so we start to get the real battles of the Civil War. And this one is called the Battle of Bull Run. It's not a great work of art or anything that we're looking at here. But what, for me, this is all about and why the first Battle of Bull Run is important, even though it didn't settle anything, it didn't decide the course of the war or anything. Why it's important is because it was the first time when Americans lined up on the field of battle, and on the other side of the field of battle were Rosetta?
Americans.
Other Americans, right? This is a civil war. And so, yeah, this is when people from the same family sometimes would be in the same battle shooting at each other. People of the same country that had been born by the Declaration of Independence and now were against each other and killing each other on the battlefield. And nobody really knew how terrible this was going to be. This was what the first Battle of Bull Run showed everybody. You can see, and luckily it's not too gruesome here, you can see people dying. And they are going to shoot each other, and they are going to impale each other on swords, and many, many people are going to die, and it's going to be horrible, and this will be this is what war is. When you cannot find a solution for a civilized, cannot find a civilized solution to a terrible problem like this, then human beings go to war. And it has been happening throughout all of history, and very tragically, it happened to Americans. They fought each other in this terrible conflict. Now, so what do we need to know about this war? There's a lot of battles, and Americans have a kind of fascination with this, which is kind of understandable, right? Because of the fact that it was a war fought by Americans against Americans. There's a lot of fascination about the battles of the Civil War, and there are so many of them. And one really fun thing that you can do as a kind of immersion or activity, especially a homeschooling activity that you can do, is find out about a local reenactment of the Civil War. In other words, there are a lot of people in America that enjoy reliving parts of what happened, and what they do is they get dressed up in costumes, they have really old guns and swords and uniforms, and they go and they reenact, which means they pretend to be the people who are actually there fighting each other, and kind of create like a theater, an open air theater, a battles of this war. And that kind of thing is done all over the place in the United States. So if if you want to kind of just get a feeling for it and enjoy that, you can. Sometimes they do it with what are called Renaissance fairs, or there are all kinds of events out there where you might be able to do the, see this sort of thing. I think it's a fascinating thing to do. I've seen them in California, and so that seems kind of unusual, but they're all over the place. So you don't have to be in one of the states where the battles actually took place for there to be interesting reenactments. So what we are going to do in this lecture is kind of focus on the big picture, not really so many of the battles. You know, for instance, here's a map of the major battles in just part of the area of the United States. And can you tell where this is? It's quite complicated, but notice what is right here. I guess I'm going to zoom in a little bit to make it easier to read off the map. Okay, what do we have here? We have the capital of the United States, Washington. And down here, when the reason why this map is worth looking at, and we're not going to worry about every single one of these red marked places where there was a battle. You see, that's the kind of thing it can get really, really complicated and not very interesting if we focus on all that. What I find fascinating, one thing that I find fascinating, is that right down here is the city of Richmond, and that was actually, Walker, do you know why I picked that out, why it's important?
Well, partly because Virginia, well, a lot of battles took place there, and also it was on the Confederate side, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Richmond was the capital of the Confederacy. So imagine that. The rebellious states made their capital Richmond. This here, Washington, was the capital of the country. These two cities are barely 100 miles apart. In this huge country, the Confederacy made their capital right next to Washington. It was like a special kind of insult, a special kind of terrible thing. Yeah, Jack says cocky. There was an element of that, I think, to it, a kind of rebelliousness that said, we're going to put our capital right here next to Washington. And so, yeah, and of course then, if the two capitals, well, the capital, Washington, and the capital of the rebellious states, Richmond, were so close together, you can imagine that this is where a lot of the fighting was done in the Civil War. And that's absolutely true. But also, mostly what happened in this area, though, was there's such big armies with really important military leaders that they kind of were stuck. Nothing much was settled here. Oh, by the way, there's the first Battle of Bull Run. Right there. Very close to Washington, wasn't it? There was a stream here called Bull Run, and that's where it happened. So these two were very, these capitals were very close, and the two armies on either side had a lot of soldiers, and they fought a lot of battles in this area, and nothing really. It's not that they didn't matter, it's that none of the battles here changed the course of the war. None of the battles here changed the course of the war. The course of the war was going to be decided by military leaders who actually spent most of their time somewhere else. So that's where this story kind of becomes interesting for me, is what happened was, we're going to go over here now to a much wider map. And just so that you can know, right, compare where we were. Here, up here in the corner is Washington and Richmond again. In our previous map, it was this, that was the whole map, right? And now what we're looking at over here is probably the most important battle of the war. In a completely different area of the United States. What military experts call the Western Theater. Generals and military historians talk about theaters of war. Kind of sounds like where there's a play, or you know, where actors are on the stage, right? And so, what was so important about this area? Well, there are two symbols that matter a great deal, a number of symbols that matter a great deal on this map. First, we have the squiggly blue lines, especially this squiggly light blue line here, joined by another squiggly light blue line here. What are the squiggly light blue lines to pay attention to on this map? Especially this really important one here that flows down to New Orleans. Jeremy, what are the squiggly blue lines?
They're showing where the American, slavery American troops went.
No, you got confused. So I'm not asking about the blue arrows, the deep blue arrows. Those are the movements of armies and forces. I'm asking about the squiggly light blue lines. I think cyan is the name of this color. So what are those? Wyatt?
Rivers.
They are rivers. Okay. Which are very important places for transportation, right? Especially the biggest river in the United States right here, the Mississippi River, right? So we see a lot of action going on around the Mississippi River over here. And then we have other kinds of lines. What are these strange looking gray lines with cross hatches on them? These matter a lot as well. And there were not that many of them. Look at them up here in the north. There are a lot of them. And then, strangely, a lot of them end right here. Boom, right at the end. They get to a river. Bang, you get to the Mississippi no more. You get to a Mississippi no more. Oh, there was one that had crossed over here. What was going on here? What are these gray lines that now are also going to be very important in the Civil War? Nemo?
Railroads.
So, by the time of the Civil War, the trains were an important technology in America, and we're going to learn about that as well, and we're going to study the Industrial Revolution a little bit here. And so, those are also very important lines. And then what Jeremy was telling us was, well, the arrows show the movement of armies or navies in some cases, and in the important battles of the Civil War. So now, it can get pretty confusing to look at maps like this, and you kind of have to be an expert to do it. If you're going to be a soldier or whatever, you can, you know, spend a lot of time looking at these things. I'm just going to point out the most important part of what was going on here, okay? So to help you kind of figure it out. So what I want you to notice is the blue lines belong to the Union, which means the North. So, what does that tell you right away? If the blue lines belong to the north, what do we notice about all of this here? And this blue squiggle is the Mississippi River. What do we know right away? Walker?
The north was in the South's territory.
Okay, good identification. The North was in the South, right? It was the North that was spending most of the time in the war taking over parts of the South, not the other way around. And so we see the progress of Northern armies. There was one invasion by a Southern army here up into Kentucky that was stopped and then deflected. And then after that, what we mostly see is the Union armies marching south. And we see two really important commanders starting to have success over here. And one of them was named Ulysses S. Grant. We'll see him again in tomorrow's lecture because he's going to become the president later. And another one is called William Tecumseh Sherman, and he's going to become the most important general in the Civil War. So they were kind of working together in this area, having a lot of successes. And one of the things they managed to do was to take over the Mississippi and cut off these states and take over these railroad hubs, especially down here, Vicksburg. And then over here, another really, really, really important one, Chattanooga. And if you take over a railroad hub, what do you take over? What was the importance of that in terms of a war? Why did railroads matter so much? Rosetta?
They would probably hold provisions. So you're basically taking the southern provisions.
Okay, so there might be provisions there, but there's actually something more important than that. Not necessarily the provisions that were at that spot, But what else, Nemo?
You can't... It's a way of stopping provisions, and you can't go back and forth with your provisions such as cauldrons.
Okay, right. So if you were the South, and you had provisions in this area that you wanted to get to your army up here, fighting in Virginia, right? How do you do it? Well, there's a railroad here coming from Chattanooga. How are you going to get your supplies if the Union controls Chattanooga? Now they control the supplies that you are able to get to your army. Exactly. And this is what became so important in the South. Now, before I get back to this, I am going to mention one thing that happened in the North that proved to be very important. If we look here on this map, we do see a battle way up here. Look at that. If this is Maryland, and this is Washington, D.C., what state is this up here? What state in your geography is north of Maryland? Definitely way up in the north. Abby?
I have two guesses. At first, it might mean New York, but then just as you were unmuting me, I thought maybe it was Massachusetts.
No, not that far. Not that far. North of Maryland. This is why you guys need to know geography. Here's Delaware over here. Patrick?
Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania, right. So we have a big, big battle up here called the Battle of Gettysburg. And so what happened was the Southern general said, okay, we've got to take this fight up to the north and show them how good we are. And so the army, the Southern army snuck up this way. The Confederate army snuck up into the north and the Northern forces had to retreat. And there was a huge battle here called the Battle of Gettysburg in 1863. And that was, you could say, a turning point in the war. Because after that, the Southern forces, the Confederacy, was never able to threaten the North again. And all of the fighting that was important after that occurred in the South. Occurred in the South. And so, I had this cool thing here. Before I get back to General Sherman and what happened in the South, I thought that this was really neat. One of the things that happened in the Civil War was that both the North and South started to develop new kinds of military technology. And so over here in the corner of this painting, you see a traditional kind of ship. A sailing vessel, right? Made out of wood and kind of like the old USS Constitution. But over here, what do you see? Very strange designs. Right, Jeremy, do you know what these are?
The ships made of iron.
Yes, right. Almost like modern submarines. A lot of the ship was underwater. Only some of it was on top. And it was very hard to destroy. And these are called the Merrimack and the Monitor. And these were ships that were very... And they fought each other. And the technology was starting to become... Of war was starting to become much more advanced. Walker, you have a question or comment about that?
Well, the battleships look iron.
Yeah, exactly. So they were starting to, the ships are being made of metal, and of course the cannons are, and so they're very hard to destroy. You've got to have more and more powerful weapons to do it. These ships actually fought to a draw because they couldn't destroy each other. So it was just the technology was changing here. Anyway, so that's just one fascinating thing about the Civil War. But I want to take us back to, as the Battle of Gettysburg was happening in the North, it was at the same time as the Battle of Vicksburg in the South. And this is 1863, partway through the war. And Chattanooga is also 1863. So the Ulysses S. Grant and General Sherman were making a lot of progress here. So Ulysses S. Grant was put in charge of the main part of the war over here, and General Sherman was left in charge in the South and proceeded to do something really critical in the war. And we see it here on the map. General, oh, now, Oh, I'm skipping around a little bit because I'm having trouble remembering the different things that I wanted to say. And so, before we get to General Sherman, something that happened that's really, really crucial in 1863. Remember what I said about the irony of the South seceding. The irony was that now the President of the United States could do things to the South that he could not do otherwise. Normally, the President does not just get to make whatever law he wants. In America, the laws have to be made by the House of Representatives and the Senate. But in a time of war, the president is not just the leader of the government. What else is he? Look down here. What do you see written here? The president is also something else, which matters a great deal in a time of war. Sigourney.
The commander of the army.
The commander-in-chief, exactly. And so, as the commander-in-chief, he could say, parts of the country are in rebellion. Therefore, they do not get the same protections in the law of the United States as everybody else. If you are in rebellion against the United States, then I, as the president, hereby declare... Important vocabulary word. The emancipation of your slaves. What does that mean? Emancipation. Crucial, crucial vocabulary word for history. Walker?
Setting free, like letting them go.
Exactly. I declare them to be free. Now, the only way that the president could do this was because the South had seceded. So again, the irony of the secession. They were in rebellion against the United States, and the president could then say, okay, the Constitution does not apply to you in the same way as it does to everybody else. So I hereby declare that you don't get to keep your slaves as property anymore. Jeremy, go ahead.
I was hoping to see about the picture of the iron ships.
Oh, well, hold on a second now. We'll come back to that. And one thing that's important about this was that this did not free all the slaves. It only freed, this is a confusion, and a lot of people think, oh, President Lincoln freed the slaves in 1863. And that is the general, and it's partly true, but it's not completely true. Because, and pay attention to this, he could only free the slaves in the South that was in rebellion. Why could he not free the slaves anywhere else? Why could he not do it anywhere else, Rosetta?
Because his army wasn't there, so we couldn't control.
No, that's not it. In the areas that he didn't control, that's where he freed the slaves. So it's the opposite, Abby?
Well, the areas that he couldn't free the slaves were the areas that were in rebellion, the areas that he did control.
Yeah, it's not... Now, there we have another kind of irony. He could not free the slaves in the areas that were not in rebellion, including parts of the South that had been reconquered by the Union. Why not? Why could he not do it? Jeremy?
Because he had no right to take away those that weren't attacking him.
There you go. He had no right to do it because the president does not get to make the laws of the United States. He has to execute the laws of the United States. That's his job, to follow the Constitution. And the Constitution did not say that he's allowed to get rid of people's slaves. So the very strange fact is that if you had slaves in different parts of the country, such as Missouri or Kentucky or Maryland, which were states where people did have slaves, but they were not in rebellion. They were not a part of the Confederacy. He did not free those slaves because he could not free them. He did not have the power to do that as the president. But because the South seceded, the irony is he could free their slaves. So this was a very important moment. It was incomplete, as we shall see tomorrow. The slaves were not all of them freed until 1865, after the war. What does it take for all of the slaves to be freed? What was required? I'll just answer. I won't expect an answer right now. But I think Jeremy wanted to say something about the military things going on here. Jeremy, go ahead.
I just wanted to say that the non-slavery ship looks a lot more like the normal submarines of today.
Yeah, you're right. So, yeah, the designs were changing, right? It does kind of look like a modern submarine. Okay, but what I wanted to say was about General William Tecumseh Sherman. After taking over Chattanooga, all of the main fighting is going on up here. Right? Between Washington and Richmond. It's not on this map because it's the other part of the... This is all about the West and the South. So all the main fighting is going on here. But this, as it turns out, what's shown on this map was the most important part of the war. Because of what happened after Chattanooga, William Tecumseh Sherman marched on Atlanta. And what do you notice about Atlanta? With all the symbols that we have been talking about, what kind of place was it? Walker? Oops, go ahead, Walker.
There was bunches and bunches of railroads around us.
Okay, it was a railroad hub. And why? Well, because Atlanta was the industrial center of the South. It was the most important city in the South. And so, if the army of the Confederacy was up here, and the main industrial center of the South was down here, well, shouldn't you be fighting the army up here? Don't you normally fight where the army is in a war? Jeremy?
No, you attack where they are weakest.
Oh, that's true, where they are weak, but also where all their supplies come from. And then what happens to the army up here? What can they do if they don't have their supplies? But more than that, what else was a big city like Atlanta was full of what? A big city like Atlanta was also full of what, Abby? Not just supplies. Yes, true, but what else? The soldiers, the men, are all up in the north. What's down here? My hint was to you was that it was all the men are up in the north in the army. So what's left down in the south? Rosetta?
Their families.
Their families, exactly. So, if William Sherman is going to burn down Atlanta, now he didn't attack women and children directly. He warned them that he was going to destroy the city of Atlanta and allowed them to leave because he wasn't a total barbarian. But by destroying the city of Atlanta and destroying their homes, what do you think the effect would be on the men up in the north? We have a very serious word for this. Walker, what's the effect?
Well, it would make them sad, and it would also make them want to come back down. down to the south and fight.
Yeah, so what are they going to do up here? They're going to be worried about their families. They're going to be sad. They're going to be distracted. It's going to be hard for them because they're not going to know what's happening to my kids, what's happening to my wife down here in the south. They're going to be worried. Right? And they're going to want to come back. Soldiers are going to desert in order to go back to their families and take care of them. Right. So we have a word for this. It is they were become demoralized. To be demoralized is kind of what you said, Walker, to be really sad. To not be willing to fight anymore, to not have the will to fight, because you know that it's not just what's going on up here that matters. What matters to you most is back home, and you're losing that. So William Sherman took away all of this industrial might of the South by taking over Atlanta and destroying it. He also demoralized the troops and basically ruined the entire countryside from Atlanta all the way to Savannah and then upwards to Columbia, and kept on wrapping up more and more parts of the South while the main army of the Confederacy is up in the North, and they know they're losing their supplies. They're losing their families. How long can they last? How long can any army last? Knowing, what are the limits, right? Knowing that your home has been destroyed, you don't know if your family is alive or not. What are you fighting for at that point? What do you fight for, right? What is the point of fighting a war? You want to have your way of life. You want to have your family. You want to be with your loved ones in your home. Well, if all of those things are gone, what are you fighting for? Patrick?
Nothing.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, is how much more can you do? Sometimes people will be willing to fight just for a belief or an idea. Right? But in this case, the slaves have been freed. You can't keep them anymore. Your family is destitute. You have no supplies. Yes. So it did not take long after that, as Sherman was working his way up in 1865 from the south, and Grant was pressuring Richmond from the north. So we finally get the surrender of the great general of the south. Whose name was Robert E. Lee. He is the man here in the gray uniform. And you can see that he is shaking hands with Ulysses S. Grant, the leader of the Union Army of the North, bringing an end to the war. So when we come back tomorrow, we're going to have to deal with the aftermath. What's it like to live in a country that has where the people have fought each other? And how do you put the pieces back together again? How do you make one country again out of a country that was so divided that it became two armies against each other? How do you put the country back together again? It did happen, but it certainly was a difficult thing to do. And so we'll learn that story tomorrow. It's called The Story of Reconstruction. I'll explain that term if it's not clear tomorrow. Okay, folks, let's see. Oops, did I lose my screen? That's it for today. It took us a while, but we had to get through it all. All right, so thank you. We'll talk to you tomorrow, everybody. Bye.
Bye, Mr. Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.